It is January 23rd, 2013. Welcome to the John Wyler Podcast. Okay, welcome to the John Wyler Podcast. Here we are at almost the end of January 23rd, 2013. I cannot believe that this month has gone by as fast as it has. And that, if that's going to set a precedence for this year, you know, I don't know how much I'm looking forward to it, because every day that goes by, we can't get back again, you know. And that's as I get along in years and my family keeps growing, I start to see that more and more clearly, and that begins to be troubling. So, while every day is a gift, and we need to face it with our eyes open and with a positive way, I hate to see things go by so quickly. But that's neither here nor there now. We have been very busy here these last couple weeks. There's been a couple weeks in between these podcasts, and I apologize for that for everybody else that's following along. I did not go to the SHOT Show this year, which was last week, and for those of you who did, let's hear that it was a good show and had another record level attendance, and that's a very good thing. And hope that a lot of good stuff came from that, too. You know, we always know there's going to be products and new things going out, but we're under a little bit different scrutiny nowadays, and we really are looking forward to a progressive view for firearms ownership. And that certainly doesn't mean this legislation that is coming down the pike here any day now. Any day. So, these last couple weeks, though, I have been swamped with courses that we have coming up with the Whittington U. Our first classes start the first weekend of March, which is right around the corner. And also with the survival trial. Our ST3 is actually 30 days from today, February 23rd. And that is something that I am... words cannot express how excited I am for the ST3. And this is the first of our cycle of life survival trials with the ST3 Winterborn. The Winterborn, it's going to be difficult. Your competitors, if you're listening, and anybody else that's interested in getting in, there's still some slots. This is the one that's filled up the slowest. And I would assume it's because of the time of the year. The terrain is already formidable. Then you throw in unpredictable weather patterns and the tail end of winter. I can understand why there's only a few select teams that are brave enough to jump in, because I think that I would probably be thinking the same way. But we have slots open. If you still want to step up, you're 30 days out. That's if you're. We've had people not even train for this event, and we're standing tall at the finish line at the end. So, if you have the will, there's always a way. But we have the arena laid out. We have all scenarios set. Our physical obstacles, mental challenges, or golden baskets. These are all things that you've seen in the past with the trials. And we've started to expand. We've added some new things for 2013, and be running a couple tests with this in the ST3. So you won't know what that is until you're getting your brief or you come across it in the arena. But that's the whole point. That's one of the reasons that you do it. So, excuse me, I have a cold too for everybody that's listening. So it's pretty much the rest of the country, evidently, since we have this huge flu epidemic. But I'm sorry if I keep sniffing because I do it unconsciously. got to throw that out there. So back to our survival trial, or ST3. We have every survival trial that we do, we make things a little more complex. And that's really by design, because we learn something new and we see things that we can't really forecast from survival trial to survival trial. And I've come to accept that as just a standard, just as normal. So it forces me and the rest of the observer controller staff, because we've expanded on the number of them, to remain flexible in how we interact with the arena and interact with the competitors within it, because we can set up the arena, but it's ultimately the competitors that shape what happens in it. So we don't really know what's going to happen until the survival trial kicks off, and it's like a mad dash for like the first 5 or 6 hours, trying to maintain where everybody's at and where they're going next and what they're doing, and track everybody. And that's extremely difficult to do. And then now to be in this February area, the area of the country is very unpredictable as far as the weather goes. And we have a lot of people from Colorado that are competing. So you Coloradans, you always seem to have a leg up on the majority of the competition, because you already train at an altitude at or above what the arena's at in the Whittington Center. But you also are very well aware of the fluctuating weather patterns. And the Whittington Center, it seems to be even more unpredictable than other areas, just because of the location, being right at the foothills of the Rockies and right at the very top of, you know, this desert tundra, the high desert area. So we get a lot of weird things happening. Like, for example, the ST2, we had a myriad of weather patterns in the arena. And this was the end of September. We had torrential rain came through and kind of the central to the southeastern part of the property. We had one evaluator I talked to in the middle of the night. He was telling me how it hailed so much that there was enough hailstones on the ground. It was like snow. And then where I was, I happened to be on the northern part of the property. It was nice. The sun was shining and it was kind of windy, but it sure wasn't doing the things that it was just a straight line mile and a half away. It's much further than trying to get there on the roads, but, you know, from line of sight, you know, it was not a very far distance with huge dramatic changes in the weather. So that's something that we're expecting here for February. But the only real main difference there is sub-freezing temperatures, especially at night, the potential for rain, freezing rain, and then to get down into this below freezing temperature, that's a whole different story. So our considerations go up as far as our safety concerns and whatnot. And the same for you, too, as competitors. You really must prepare. We have the packing list sets online right now. And that's been online for a few months. But that's the base. All right? A lot of that is just so everybody's carrying the same weight. And you have some specific items in there to help you to negotiate some scenarios or some obstacles, whether or not you hit them, you know, if you make it to them. So it's kind of on you now to make sure that you're dressed appropriately, that you're physically prepared to be out in the cold and the wet and the snow, potentially, and not succumb to the characteristics of hypothermia. So keep this in mind now. You are 30 days out, 30 days away. So you have time now to get your mind focused around that concept of, I don't want to go down physically during this race that I've been training for the last 4 or 5 months. And we don't want you to either, because that means I got to drag you out of there and, you know, potentially fly you someplace. And not to say that I won't, because I will, because your safety is my utmost concern, but I just don't want to have to do that. But the ST-3, it's going to be a very interesting race. And there still are slots available, too, if you're we're 30 days out. I don't know if I've already said this or not, so I apologize if I'm repeating myself, but we've had people come through that haven't trained for this event before. They just stepped right into it. I had a team, last ST-2, just got home from deployment. And they came in and drove up, and they slept in their Jeep the night prior to a 24-hour, extremely physical adventure race, and stepped into it. And they did very well, you know, considering what the arena was and the things that they went into and their prep time. You know, that was very impressive to watch them, because this particular team ran into some huge obstacles along the way. You know, a series of circumstances, but they did not quit. They did not lose their composure. And they were, you know, standing tall at the award ceremony. They weren't quite at the finish line, but they were at the award ceremony. They did not quit. So, if you're still interested and you're thinking about, well, I don't know if there's enough time to get in. There is. You can do whatever you want to do. We'll give you the opportunity, too. So just remember, where there's a will, there's always a way. So final portion here with the ST-3, we are looking for evaluators. We need some volunteers. So if you have done this before and had a good time at it, which we hope you did, come back. Even though it's winter time, I mean, everybody's like, a lot of people, their first thought is, I don't want to stand outside in the cold. Well, we're going to get things together for you, evaluators especially, because you are volunteering your time and effort to come out and help us with this. We're going to take care of you. So we're not going to put you out in the cold all night, 24 hours. If you're stuck someplace, you know, that where you can't come in or anything like that, we will make sure that you have cover. We'll make sure that you're warm. We'll make sure you have enough food. Make sure you have enough water. We'll make sure that this is a fun event for you. So you can walk away saying, hey, that was a great time. I want to come back and either compete or help us out again. Because we cannot do the survival trial without you, the evaluator. So if you want to come and help us, we have many different positions, and we're not going to talk about it right here, but we would like to have you. Send us an email at info@survivaltrial.com. And we will get back to you with an evaluator form. Just fill that out. And then we'll get you a schedule. We're going to release the evaluator schedule here by Friday. But we'll get you a schedule, because we're going to start training the evaluators a little bit differently this year. And we're going to at least devote 1 or 2 days specifically towards evaluators and how they interact in the survival trial arena. Because this is very important. And you will not be on a position without with a minimum of 2 people. That's what our shooting scenarios and our physical obstacles. We always have a minimum of 2 people. Number one, for safety, and two, also to keep you occupied. Because a survival trial, just like, you know, a lot of things in life, there are just huge periods of excitement, but there's also periods of boredom in between. So we want to make sure that you have somebody there to help you have a good time, you know. And we also take care of you, too. So if you don't live in the area, the Raton, northeastern New Mexico area, we'll put you up on site, and we'll feed you, and make sure that, again, you come back and help us out. Excuse me. Boy, I know that the sickness has been going around, and I've been very fortunate. I don't really get sick very often. But it's hit me right now, so I apologize. So, moving on, for upcoming events, we have our March courses that I touched upon here at the beginning, but we have our Practical Pistol 1, Impractical Pistol 2, which is March 8th and 9th and 10th, 11th. These are part of our Defensive Academy down at the Whittington U. And like it states, this is the defensive implementation of the sidearm. So our goal with these courses are to create a very strong baseline interaction with the firearm, to create a very simple path of presentation, path of least resistance. So when we're under these periods of emotional duress, our bodies will give our minds as much time by doing the things that they're supposed to, by employing this firearm in a defensively sound fashion, and giving our minds as much time as possible to assess the situation and make a timely yet correct response to it. It's the emotional duress that causes the chain of events, the mental response and the physical response. So the physical response is going to be there. The body is going to do what it's always done, what you've taught it to do. So we want to do that in the most simplistic manner, most efficient way. So we work with a very strong fundamental base of interaction with the firearm, and then we build out from there. So we'll work with that, then we'll start moving into our movement drills and utilizing the principles of cover. And then we work into some additional firing drills. We have a free movement drill, which is unique to the Whittington U and PMI. This movement drill, free movement drill, we have an area that we have blocked off that you have the ability to choose your next covered position, how well you're going to utilize that by implementing the principles of cover. And we have some video up online, and we're going to start to expand that a little bit more in 2013 as far as our media interaction, so videos and the like. So I mean, really, we want you to come to these classes so you can get that real strong base interaction. I always use that term, strong base interaction, with the firearm, because that denotes doing the same thing each time, that consistency. And then we want you to go home and practice it. So look towards more videos, instructional videos here as this year goes on. And finally, within our Defensive Academy, we have our Practical Carbine 1, which is March 14th through the 16th. This school of Practical Carbine, that's broken down into 2 3-day courses. So our Defensive Academy, there are a total of 6 days of training from the different levels. So the Practical Pistols 1 through 3, and then the Practical Carbines 1 and 2. But the intent's the same. It's always defensive implementation. Violence of any sort is always the means of last resort. So that means that we want to do everything in our power possible to avoid violence. Now, we all know that is virtually an impossibility in life. We will strive for this, but there are always those who have an affiliation for violence. They enjoy. I don't know if it's a competition in their mind. Some people, they just have something chemically wrong with them. But it will always be there, and we must train to be prepared for that. So that's really the baseline, though, in these defensive academies, that we work from the response to an aggressive action taken against us. And so that's not just the manipulation of the firearm, but it's also how we posture ourselves in our environments. And we cover this in length in all levels of our courses, and then we really implement them in the shooting drills, and then finally our scenarios. And the scenarios are a really neat way to kind of send everybody home, because it gives everybody something to think about. Whether or not, what would I have done in this situation? Would I really have done what I did? You know, knowing that this is real people, real life, real consequences, and not on the range. You know, it's very interesting. So we hope to see if you're thinking about coming out here and learning more about your equipment, or if you're kind of on the fence as to when. The time is now. The time is now. Okay, so moving on. We are also offering some employment here through Professional Marksmen, specifically for our work at the Whittington U. Our program has grown exponentially here since it started back last February 2012. And this is very good. You know, I mean, we're very excited about this, and we're very fortunate, very grateful for the opportunity to get to train down at the Whittington Center and get to be around, first of all, in the facilities, and then be around everybody that works there. There are, you know, really some of the best people that I've had the privilege of knowing that I get to interact with on a daily basis down at the Whittington Center. And many of you that, you know, have gone there or go there on a regular basis, you already know this because you've experienced the same. So with that, though, our program is expanding. We are running more courses in all of our academies, our precision and defensive academies. We're working more classes now with the Outdoor Academy. We'll start to unveil our School of Survival here next week sometime of things up online, different course descriptions, mainly with our School of Survival. I'm very excited about that because it kind of ties into the survival trial, but it's how we survive in our daily lives now. We will have wilderness survival courses, but the scope of it is going to be how would we survive if, let's just say, our infrastructure fails, for example, and our power goes off or we have these rolling brownouts. And have you ever been in a brownout, an area where the power goes off periodically and sometimes, you know, without warning, without knowing when it's going to come back on again, or your water? Because I have. It's not a good feeling. But that's really the focus there. We're going to try to implement a School of Survival to make it relevant to our lives as we lead them now. So with that being said, I need some more help. We offer a veterans preference program, combat veteran preference, with our employment process. We have a large problem of unemployment with our recently separated veterans. So we want to, instead of talking about things, because I'm a big advocate for veteran rights, veteran support, but instead of talking, I also want to get into some more action with this. So we have a veterans employment preference program put in place through Professional Marksmen Incorporated. You veterans, you have incredible levels of life experience. You have things that nobody can teach. And that's, we're looking for you. We want you, we want your work ethic. We want your mentality as it comes to working with others. And your mentality as a teacher. Because you've learned great things being in the military on how to teach others. If you've been a leader of any capacity, you're also a teacher. So we want you. Get online. There's an employment tab at www.professionalmarksman.com. Download the employment application. Fill that out. Send that back with your DD-214. And we have dates coming up in March and April for our defensive instructor level 1. And then level 2 is coming up in June and August, I believe. But that's all listed under the calendar. The calendar page on the PMI website, and also on the employment page too. So you'll know what dates will work for you. But come be part of our team, and get to take part in some of the more comprehensive training curriculums and training areas in the world. Really, I have been all over the world, and I have never seen a facility like the NRA Whittington Center. So take a look at it. Get in touch with us. Okay. So finally, last thing we're going to talk about here are what's going on, our current events. This is our awareness portion of the program. Now, I've already established my beliefs. Okay, I believe that all individuals in this world, regardless of where you live, you have the fundamental right of life. And that means you have the right to defend yourself in any capacity. And I don't believe that the means to defend ourselves should ever be regulated by a governing body. Because ultimately, nobody knows better for you than you. And nobody's going to keep the bad guys, those who want to cause you harm, these threats that we don't see, that we don't know, because we don't, ultimately, we don't know the intent of others. No amount of regulation is going to keep them at bay. So, with these fundamental beliefs, okay, the right to life, let's talk about what's going on in the news. I've been very interested, and I've written about it. It's been a couple weeks have gone by. I haven't written any articles about this. And again, I apologize for that. I'll get back on top of that. It's been a very busy time. But no real legislation has come into, the media spotlight. I know that there have been bills that have been introduced, but nobody has been really talking about it in that way, the law aspect of it, the part that really matters. You see a lot of these talk shows and things like that, and all the news, not just one or two, but just about all of them, to include your local affiliates. They will repeat this, the same tone and same connotation as what you see on like the CBS News and 60 Minutes and Today Show or whatever, whatever they're talking about. So we know that there is just from what we see, there's a coordinated effort to try to change your mind. Or maybe not yours, who's listening to this, but your family member or your neighbor or something that doesn't really understand what a quote-unquote military-style weapon is. I don't even utilize the term weapon. And our instructors also do not utilize the term weapon, because it's not. And I have myself included, military veterans. We're all military veterans. That's how we refer to that in the military, because that's their primary use. Their weapons. And I mean, that's really when the baseline. That's what it's intended for. As a defensive tool in our case, or defensive weapon. But so is everything else. There's a negative connotation with that term weapon. And that's what I'm trying to stay away from. Just like the term assault rifle. There's no such thing. There's rifle. Just like anything else. And we've already touched upon that. And that's already been touched upon by everybody else that's talking along this line. It's a coordinated effort to utilize specific terms, negative terms, to tie to, in this case, these inanimate objects. So, but really, right now, like this week, I think it was like the 22nd or around this time, there was supposed to have been some legislation introduced into Congress by Senator Dianne Feinstein. And I think it's really interesting because I try to take a very wide view on this, these concepts here. These concepts of representation, because I'm not sold on the idea that it's just one person that's doing these things, and that are trying to push these agendas through and this and that. Like we're trying to put all the blame on President Obama, and I am not standing up for President Obama. Trust me, I don't stand up for anybody that's in charge that takes away the rights of those he's supposed to represent or be taken care of. I don't support that. I don't acknowledge that. So that can be said of the president that came before, because that's when the Patriot Act, especially in 2001, when that came down. So with that disclaimer out there, I still don't think it's just one person. I don't think it's Obama's trying to do this or that. There's more than one. This is a collective effort to try to get these things, these agendas or these ideas pressed upon or pushed on to the masses. And the masses is you and I, the people. You know, the backbone of the country. Because we're an organization in the United States of America. We represent to the rest of the world, supposed to be the beacon of light. You know, I mean, that's, we're all very proud to be an American. We sing songs about that, you know. And I am. I'm very proud to be an American. We have the best standard of living. We have, you know, the best medical system, for sure, right now anyways. Who knows what's going to happen here a year from now. School systems, those are kind of going down from what you read in the news. But where I live, you know, that's one of the reasons I moved to where I live now, because the school system is great. You know, I graduated here, so I know that firsthand. So we have the best, is what I'm getting at. We have the best. And it's for a reason. Because we've had the freedom to do that. We've had the freedom to blossom. But lately, these last 10 years, 11 years, that freedom has been increasingly and systematically stifled. And it's showing. It's showing in our economy right now. Our businesses are gone. And that's even before, you know, September 11th. I mean, that's been happening for a couple decades now, 90s for sure. But our economy is gone. The crime has increased because of that. I mean, that's, I guess I shouldn't put it that way, because that isn't 100% correct. We see the pockets where the crime is increased. And generally speaking, those are, you know, the higher population metropolitan areas. And a lot of it, too, is also where there are government programs in place. And not to put any type of demographic down, any type of culture or anything, because I grew up, I live right next to a Native American and Indian reservation. And it is not a very safe place, I mean, statistically, as far as crime goes. And a lot of it is directly attributed to these plans that have been put in place, and really, you know, for over a century now, on the Native Americans. I see that firsthand here. And I think it's terrible. It's horrible. It's a vicious cycle. It's very difficult to get out of it, too. You know, it's essentially a broken culture that continues to stay broken. You know, and it was by design with the Native American. They would take them and they totally erased their culture, or they attempted to, and they ended up just breaking it. They didn't erase it, but they broke it. And it's horrible. And yet we did it. You know, I mean, we did it as a nation back in the 1800s, our manifest destiny. It happened. It's the same thing now with these programs in the metropolitan areas, this welfare program, this welfare state that we're on. It the results are all the same, you know. So I believe that in a progressive society, you have to have some social programs in place. That's just, to me, that's a given. But they should not become a way of life. And they should not be set up to actually harm the individual. They should be set up to help the individual. And maybe that's how they started. I don't know. I mean, that's a debatable thing. But getting back to proud to be an American, and how our beacon of light is slowly being snuffed out, because we're not free to shine. We're losing our freedom to shine. But I think that what's also interesting in this day and age is that people are starting to take more responsibility, first of all, for themselves, and then secondly, their acceptance of their civic obligation. So there are certain things as a citizen that we are obligated to do, and the first and foremost is to vote, is to elect those to represent us. And then also to hold them accountable. We can't just put people in charge and say, ah, okay, yeah, that's my guy. My guy's in, or my girl's in. You can do me. They'll do it right by us. So I'm gonna go back and go to work, or you know, whatever. People are starting to do this. There are more people that are engaging in these forums, these public forums with their representatives, which I think is awesome. Like, I think it was 2 years ago now where they had these forums where the representative would come back and they would just get their butts chewed by their constituents because they weren't doing what they were supposed to. Then the media would spin it as, you know, people are angry and they're yelling and we can't have this, we need to have a debate. Well, no. You need to start doing your job. If I was working for somebody, and I wasn't, if I said, ah, yeah, yeah, I'm doing this, I've been paying this bill for the last 3 months, and then all of a sudden, you know, the power shut off, and I would have to expect to get my butt chewed by my boss, who I am accountable to. Same thing. These representatives, we're their boss. They're accountable to us. They at that time, needed to expect to get some kind of retribution for their failings, their shortcomings. The same thing is happening now. We have all these progressive, quote-unquote, progressive leanings, liberal, another quote-unquote liberal leanings that want to say guns are, why do we need these guns? The Second Amendment, how does that relate to our lives now, when it was written so long ago under such different times? Trying to sell it, package it, and sell it in that fashion. Many people are standing up and saying, no. No. And I think that's great, especially you veterans. You veterans especially. You have reports that have been put out by the Department of Homeland Security characterizing veterans as threats. Look that up. I'll actually put that a link to that in the notes for this podcast. That makes me sick to my stomach. Sick to my stomach. So, keep doing what you're doing. For those of you who are listening to this and anybody else that's talking about our rights, our fundamental human rights, our rights to life, this right to defend ourselves, keep talking. Keep talking. Keep saying no. Like, no, that's not right. Nope, that's not right. Because it's not right what they're doing, what they're saying. Trying to say that the Second Amendment's out of date. It's not out of date. That's right in the times. It's current. It's current, and it will never be out of date. It'll never, ever be out of date. We cannot allow that. We should not be standing by and having people tell us what to think or try to manipulate us. That's another thing I can't stand. Anybody that knows me, the minute that starts to happen, that individual who tries to do that, we don't talk anymore. Because that is not the way to do business. It's not the way to live your lives. We should not abide by that. Although we are, you know, affronted. Or accosted, I guess would be a better word, on every front by these social, what's the right word here? Oh, by those wanting to change our society, trying to push their own agenda. So anyways, moving on here. We don't see much right now in the news about this disarmament of the American people. I'm looking right online right now about the Feinstein bill, and I have a quote here. We just had 19 executive actions put in by the president, and he likened a lot of it to mental health, which really concerns me. What I interpreted, and it might be incorrect because I need to do a little more research on this, but what I interpreted was that these psychiatrists and maybe psychologists have the freedom now to basically report you Like, if you have violent thoughts and things like that, if you want to go and talk about these things, which is what you... if you have these things, you go to a therapist, you're supposed to talk about these... excuse me, these things. But now they're in the position to have to report this, which tells me right now that that is ripe for abuse. It's also ripe for a lot of misidentification, because that's a big deal. If you get put on some kind of list where you are mentally defective, you can't... there's a lot of things you can't... you won't be able to do. Owning a firearm is definitely going to be one of them. And whether... and is that right? Is that correct? You know, this... it seems to be very gray to me, and it seems to be very dangerous. But again, you know, we talk about mental health and how mental... some that, that needs to be something that's addressed. That's one of the talking points here. I agree with that. I agree that mental health needs to be addressed. But I think that it needs to be addressed in the way of, why are we over-medicating the American population, especially veterans? I'm a veteran, and that's I work closely with veterans. I will have a project that I'm working on this year. It's going to be tied to our survival trial called the Warrior Rendezvous, and that's a it's an outdoor kind of... I don't know if you've seen the Mountain Man Rendezvous. They hold them at the Whittington Center every year. It's I really like that. It's really, really neat. But it's an outdoor kind of a retreat for veterans, and it's got a therapeutic model that's built into it to an outdoor activity. It's a rendezvous. And right now, you know, we'll be utilizing the mountains in New Mexico, but hopefully we'll get to branch this out around the nation. But, you know, the whole point of that is drugs are being pushed on our soldiers as a means to cope with this post-traumatic stress, these traumatic events that they are encountering in these combat zones. And now they're having all these pills shoved at them. And pills for other pills, you know. And it's just, to me, it's not the appropriate way to be dealing with these symptoms. Because again, I have them. I mean, I've been dealing with them. I've been watching them. I've been analyzing them. You know, and I mean, just recently, last couple of years, I went back to college, and that was extremely difficult because that's way out of my environment. You know, it's almost 180 degrees opposite. I loved it, by the way. I'd love to be a college professor. You know, that'd be great. But it was pretty difficult at first, because all these things would come up that I wasn't expecting, but they were directly related to, you know, my time in combat. So the analyzation process, you have to acknowledge it, first of all, and then work yourself through it. You can't be all whacked out on drugs, because that's what's happening. Everybody's all whacked out. So I think that mental health, yes, we need to approach that, but not in the way that we do business now, by prescribing, abusing prescriptions, abusing chemicals is really what it is. So these executive actions, they're concerning to me, this mental health. Because I will tell you what, if there are any ideas of post-traumatic stress being a mental defect, then I will be leading the charge to fight that. Because that is something... any assault on veterans like that, to me, is a very, very big deal, by those who have been sending them to war for over a decade now. You better start taking care of our veterans. There's a lot of things that you should be doing that you're not. And that's... I mean, God bless those who do. There are many organizations out there. We sponsored Not Alone this last survival trial. They work specifically with post-traumatic stress. They do a great job. There are other organizations, Wounded Warrior Projects, one of them, even though they denounce the firearms industry, they still help veterans. So IAVA, they're another one. There are these organizations, there are these individuals who have taken it upon themselves to fill this gap that the government is, where they're failing, and God bless them. That's a great thing. But I want those who are sending our youth to war to take care of them too. That's what I want. I want that to be, you know, I don't want anybody to feel like they were used and thrown away. And that seems to be what's happening right now. So, moving on with that, back to this firearms debate, okay, because unfortunately this mental health thing, they go hand in hand. I'm looking at a quote here about Feinstein. She's saying that she supports the president's call to reinstate the ban on assault weapons and high-capacity ammunition magazines. And she goes on to say he was exactly right when he said weapons designed for the theater of war have no place in our society. I think that that's really a bold statement. Because under the NDAA in 2011, the United States was declared a battleground, a battle zone. So it leads me to ask this question. What type of society do we live in right now? All right. This is kind of dragging on a little bit long. I'm going to hit these other points and I'm going to say goodbye. When we were talking before about the NDAA, okay, it just came up right here. We are now, as Americans, United States citizens, under the threat to being detained under our government under suspicion of terrorism or terroristic activities. I'm reading an article out of the Washington Times right now, and this will be in the notes, that the title is, it was written on, what was it, January 17th, 2013. The title is, West Point Center Cites Dangers of Far Right, in quotes, in U.S. And basically, the article states that there's a West Point think tank that issued a paper warning America, okay, warning America, about far-right groups such as the Anti-Federalist Movement, which supports civil activism, individual freedoms, and self-government. All right. Now, when I've talked before about the NDAA and the wording of suspicion of terroristic activities and terrorism, there's no definition of who a terrorist is. The whole thing is wrong. The whole thing should not be there. Those who voted for it should be voted out of office. They should be fired for even voting for this, for even supporting this. But the wording in it is extremely gray. Who's to say what a terrorist is? And I saw this article cites the dangers of the far right, this quote-unquote anti-federalist movement that supports civil activism, which is what I am supporting right now. I'm supporting you who are active in these groups that go and engage in debates, in public debates with your representatives, who talk about our Bill of Rights, all right, all of our freedoms. The civil activism is actually covered in our Bill of Rights. These individual freedoms, which is our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, right? I mean, that's in our Declaration of Independence. And self-government. Now, that's kind of a term that can be taken a little bit different ways, but basically, that it's all tied together into our liberties. Self-government is basically your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It doesn't mean that you're living outside of law or believe that that anarchy is the rule or no government, because that never works. It never works. So, we have a West Point, a military center, think tank, that is warning America about these far-right groups, which seems to be the majority of America right now. Believe it or not, for what you see in the news, what other people are, what this bully pulpit is telling us. But now, it seems to be associated with potential terroristic activities, this far-right group, which utilizes our basic freedoms. It actually enforces our civic obligations, are now part of a report issued by the Combating Terrorism Center at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. How about that? I would really like everybody to read this, and I'd really like everybody to think about this and how this ties into the National Defense Authorization Act and the indefinite detention of U.S. citizens for terrorist or terrorism activities or suspicion of such. That is, these are not good signs. And again, I'm generally not a doom and gloom person. I try to take things with a grain of salt because I've seen things, and I've seen a lot of these things in different countries. But the signs are here. It's right here. I'm looking at it. If you're listening to this, get up on the podcast page and click it. Read it for yourself. It's crazy. It's crazy. So, with that, I would like to leave that with you. I would like you to take some time and think about this and think about what this means to you individually, you as the individual. What does this mean to you and to your family? And then think about, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to start engaging others around you in conversation that goes against what we are seeing in the news and seeing in the media? You are the majority. We are the majority. Are we talking, we're labeled as conservatives and right wing and things like that? And that's not the case. I don't accept those labels because I don't think of myself that way. I think about it as common sense. Common sense. So, Think about that and give me your comments, all right? Comment either on the Facebook page or comment on the podcast page or send me an email. I am very happy to hear what you have to think. All right, well, thank you again for taking the time and investing to listen to the John Wyler podcast, and join me here next week as we talk more about life, liberty, and our pursuits of happiness. All right, thank you. Have a great day. Aliens come out the ground. Carolina. Carolina. Down arrow. That winding road. Where you picked up a fight just to stay the night. With that crazy girl, Carolina, Carolina, where the fruits and the trees and the flowers and bees, the moon was a shooting star, Carolina, Carolina, down narrow. That piney road. You can feel the breeze as far as you see. The glow from a mason jar. Carolina. Carolina. Down that road. That winding road. Where the fruits and the trees and the flowers and bees glow from a mason jar. Carolina, Carolina, down that road, that sandy crossroad. Where the fruits and the trees and the flowers and bees, find that woman you love. Where the fruits and the trees and the flowers and bees. You'll find that woman you love. Carolina.